This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Drop the motherfucking intro. Inner Ho Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who has survived a coup, right? That's kind of weird. And whose pronouns are she and her?
Me, Rodeca, a fat, black, non-monogamous, and a sexualist femme whose life is a series of coincidences, like a coup, that somehow landed her here.
Ooh.
And pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, whose name just sounds like Aku.
Oh shit, that's so funny. Thank you. I'll never say your name the same again. All right, on every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising, myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. And our fourth co-host, Rob, is not able to join us this week, but they'll be back in a couple of weeks. So this episode, we're talking about managing your time in the new year and beyond, TikTok, Instagram, and sex work, the Gen Z romantic ballad called Throat Baby, Cyberpunk 2077, video games, and feminism, plus how to handle the impact of sexual trauma, and much, much more.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoUprising without the G on Twitter, InnerHoUprising on Instagram and Facebook, and you can join our Facebook group by searching InnerHoUprising, CUMMUNITY, and head out to InnerHoUprising.com to pay a hoe.
If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, well, we would love to do that. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. We're getting into our first segment that we like to call Ho of the Week, and we've got a bump for it too. Drop the bump.
Grandma! Yeah. Are you a hoe?
That is the,
I love it.
That's the trap. Because you guys are the hoes. Okay, so Ho of the Week is when we shout out homies who have supported Inner Ho Uprising the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week, we got Angela L, whose nickname is Given Out L's, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Orion W, a.k.a. Inora, who became a patron on Patreon. We got John P, a.k.a. Jay-Z, who became a patron on Patreon. Thicky Smiley, whose nickname is just Thicky Smiley, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Catalina G, a.k.a. Tater Thoughty, who became a patron on Patreon. Kelsey, a.k.a. Keenan and Kelsey, who became a patron on Patreon. You know what? There's two people who didn't become patrons on Patreons but donated to us on PayPal, but I didn't write down the difference. So you two know in your hearts who you are. We got Jessica B, a.k.a. Jessica Rabbit, who paid a hoe in some very good way. We got Mixed to Justice, whose nickname is Mixed to Justice, because there's a reverence to that that can't be replicated in a nickname. So thank you very much. We got Lex C, a.k.a. Hey Shantae, Willow W, a.k.a. Womp Womp, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Ellen O, a.k.a. Elle Woods, who became a patron on Patreon. And we got Chameleon Hair, Chameleon There, tougher than Nigerian Hair, who upped their pledge on Patreon. Thank you all very much for supporting the show. If you would like to be a Ho of the Week and get a cool nickname, here are some things you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written. You can shout us out on social media. These are non-monetary ways that you can support the Inner Ho Uprising podcast. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in the midst of the end of the world, monetary support might not be feasible for many folks. So if you can't, don't. But if you can, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho, or you can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising, the links to all of which are in the show notes. Plus, we got some perks, some piggity perks, some perky titties, all of those kinds of things. Also, a reminder that if you do become a Patreon, Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat and our patron-only film nights. And for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any Patreon tier, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops and parties, and access to our pre-episode hangout chats on Zoom. I've got a serious question before we hop into the show. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Say, I don't know, an attempted coup, also known as an attempted akua, or a seemingly never-ending cycle of chaos and despair due to the world's socio-political shortcomings, run-of-the-mill racism, run-of-the-mill sexism, transphobia, ableism, and the like. Is this preventing you from achieving your full happiness? Yeah. Of course the fuck it is. These are horrible things. These are potentially the worst things ever. And yeah, I agree. It's hurting me too, which is why I really love the teletherapy service BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. I live in the world, so I think that's pretty nice. You can log into your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it super easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. So BetterHelp, along with we here at the Inner Hall Uprising podcast, want you to start living a happier life today, right now. So you can check out their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily, and visit betterhelp.com/IHU, that's Better H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Plus, we've got a special offer for Inner Hall Uprising listeners, that is y'all. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/IHU. That's Better BetterHelp.com/IHU. Now we're going to get into a segment that we like to call self-care tip. And here's the drop for that, baby. We got drops on drops on drops. Shout out to the homie Wave Ghost, aka Lucas, who created that track. Love that guy. All right, self-care tip of the week is the segment where we give you tips on how to care for yourselves. I'm going to say create for yourselves. Create can also be care, but this is how to care for yourselves. So let's start your 2020 off right with a lesson in time. Who here struggles with time management?
Me.
Yes. Okay. So a little bit of background. I have long had poor time management habits. Several months ago when the pandemic Lovato, that is the alternate name for the pandemic, started, I began taking a lot of online classes. One such class was about time management, and I will put the link to that class in the show notes. It is not free, just to let you know, unless you do a 7-day trial of a site that I'm not going to mention because they're not sponsoring us, but it'll be in the link in the show notes. But if you're like me, you might have like a bunch of things floating around in your mind that you have to do or that you want to do. And throughout the day, you're hopping from one thing to the other thing, and your brain is reminding you of some unfinished task that you've yet to complete. It's very stressful. And then you end up not completing everything that you wanted to complete in the first place. So to help address that, today's self-care tip is to do a mental clearing exercise and to schedule deeply into the future. If it exists, we'll find out the next episode of this world. So step one in the mental clearing exercise process is to set up your mental clearing exercise. So you'll need a sheet of paper, whether it be physical or digital or like a big old, piece of cardboard. That didn't make any sense. You just need something to jot things down on. An hour of your free time, let's say, maybe a friend, and a list of categories that are going to cue your brain to all of these unfinished things that you have going on in your old noggin. So these categories can be things like work, personal life, health and wellness, relationships, appointments, home, bills, hobbies. Basically, it's just general buckets of all the stuff that make you you and that comprise of the things that you're allotting your time to. So if you're me, for example, one of your buckets might be Interhoa Uprising, or if you were Kua or Rebecca or Rob. But if you were specifically Rob, for example, one of your buckets might be the dogs, because Rob has dogs and has to do many things to take care of those dogs. So step two is to do the actual exercise. So the exercise is going to consist of this. You're going to read off the cues and write down anything in your mind that you want or need to do that the cue reminds you of. Even if what you're reminded of doesn't fit in the category, still jot it down because it's floating around somewhere. Just get it out of your brain. If you've gotten a friend to help you out, have them read the cues and you just focus on searching your brain for all the stuff that you need to get out. At the end of the exercise, schedule 4 hours in your day in the future, not on that same day, to process everything you've taken out of your mind. And then after you're done, like, really bask in the fact that you've released yourself from the burden of feeling like you have to remember several things at once, because now they're written down, so you don't have to remember them all the time and keep reminding yourself. They are in a place that you're going to get back to. Step three is to process and schedule deeply into the future. So when I say processing in this instance, I'm saying it as in meaning you pick what you have to do with that task and when you're going to do that task. So in the 4 hours that you've set aside, you're going to go through each item that you've cleared out of your mind and figure out what the next step in the task is and when you're going to do that next step. So let's say what you got out of your mind was to renovate your basement. The next step is not renovate your basement, because you're not going to renovate your basement all at once. It's not how anything works. But sometimes when you have poor time management skills, you're like, I have to start this right now. And then you start doing everything with it and it's way too much to do in a day and you don't get it done. That's why you're not getting it done. So the actual next step is the first thing you need to do to start the task. So that could be clear out old boxes or research contractors. So you're going to take that very next step and then you're going to pick a time to do that thing. Don't do that as a part of your processing, though. Just figure out what you're going to do and set a time to do it. Don't start doing the thing. Don't start clearing out the boxes, because then you're going to move on and now you've forgotten all of these things that you were supposed to be processing on that day in that 4 hour lot of time. So you're going to pull out a calendar and you're going to look at when you actually have time to do that specific task. Everything you've addressed in your mind clearing exercise is not going to get done next Saturday, and that's okay. So that's why I say schedule deeply into the future, like actually give yourself time to do the things that you need or want to do. And step four is to have faith in yourself that you will actually get it all done, because you can. You just need to give yourself adequate amount of time to do so and adequate space to do so. And finally, I'll leave you with this. Repeat this mind clearing exercise and deep scheduling process every 3 to 4 months. The links that I'm putting in the show notes are the link to that course I was telling you about. It tells you more about just time management skills in general. And then I'm also going to put a link in the show notes about different kinds of cues that you might want to do during a mind clearing exercise. And that's this week's self-care tip.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Even just reading and hearing that, like, all of the practical steps, it takes me back to, I guess, elementary school, when we were first learning about goals or like things we're supposed to do, and just like short term is like these, they felt massive to me, but they were supposed to be like a month. And it's just like my short term is like, okay, I'm going to clean my whole house and da 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 da. And like there's no practical steps in between, as opposed to this, which feels like get it all out because it's always buzzing in there anyway, and then worry about at another time really dicing it up. And it, granted, it feels like it should be something that we're all doing, but we're told like, all right, your short term is things that you're going to do tomorrow and that's everything. But then your long term is like, you know, and that's like the way my brain does it. And because I'm writing it down, I say to myself, I have to get this done immediately, or I'll just be like, all right, I want to clean my room. And in the middle of that, I forget about all the things that are still buzzing around and I'm running to clean my room and I'm overwhelmed. So like I really appreciate like the broken down approach of just like getting it out and purging it. And then really dissecting each one and like taking the time to say, no, you're not doing this now. What needs to be done? Yeah. And that's like, I never even thought about it that way. So that's definitely.
Me neither. I think like time management is like literally a skill. I don't think that you're born with that. Or I sure as shit wasn't.
Skip me in the gene pool, because I don't know.
Yeah. So it's like you never thought about it because nobody taught you how to do that. Yeah. And that would be a nice thing. School.
Get on
at school, CC school to the email.
What really stuck out to me, because a lot of these steps I already do, opening my calendar and then like putting things far into the future. Like, yeah. So Ms. Smith was like, open the calendar, the April 12th, you don't got nothing there? At 8 p.m., we're watering the plants. That's what we're doing on April 12th. Write it in. I like that, and yeah. I'm going to start implementing that.
For sure, for sure. Okay, now we're going to get into a new segment that we're proud to introduce. It also has a drop, because everything has drops now.
We fancy.
We are fancy.
Baby, come through. You deserve rounds tonight.
So that should just give you a little bit of background to how ridiculous this new segment is. But this is a working title, Throat Baby. It is a moment to discuss, rant about, or laugh at nonsense in the realm of sex, love, and dating as seen in pop culture or social media. And Akua has something very interesting in store for us.
All right. So today for this inaugural, is it not, inaugural is the word, right?
See.
Okay. A segment. I am going to be unpacking the BRS Cash song, Throat Baby.
Exciting.
And in this essay, I will be discussing this song. I will be trying to persuade you guys to see this song as the ghetto love letter and the appreciation for the sexual labor of women, specifically women of color, black women, that it really is.
Okay.
So this came from two things. One, for some reason, I've had an infatuation with this song. I hear it. It sounds very romantic to me. I'm like, aw, I want someone to speak to me that way. And I don't know if this is because I'm deprived of sexual attention or I've just been in my home for too long. And
maybe a little bit of both.
And not interacting with people who compliment me, that I just, you know, I'm just taking the bar is in hell. Like, it's on the floor. I'm taking whatever comes, you know. I don't know if it's that. But yeah, I find the song quite romantic. And then there was a Twitter user by the handle of @shubes. And Sam will write that down. Who tweeted, Throat Baby is actually about empowering women to find their own voice. Now, this tweet is absolutely satirical. They were just trolling us. But it then linked to the fact that I really find this song romantic. So I have to now tell the masses why we should be listening to BRS Cash's song with a different ear, you know? Okay, so we are going to take a look at the lyrics, and I will ask my co-host to join me in singing the chorus. We'll start with the chorus.
Okay.
1, 2, 3. Sexy little bitch, sexy little hoe. I love the way you walk. I love the way you talk. Let a young man come play your throat. Do you stroke your throat till you make you choke?
Throat babies.
I know that part.
I'm trying to give it to you.
Throat babies.
I'm trying to bust all on you. So that is the chorus. I want to dissect this by saying, first he starts by showering you with compliments. Who does not want to be a sexy little bitch
and a sexy little hoe?
And a sexy little hoe.
It says it with a swag and a confidence that's like, oh, who, me? Oh, me? Thank you. I am a sexy little hoe. And I see this happening in the finest of my hoe outfits. I see me, you know, on a Miami beach, back on a girl's getaway, you know, wearing nothing but string. And someone's like, hey, that's sexy little hoe. And I'm like, I know I look good. Yes. So he starts out showering us with these compliments.
It's also the, sorry to interject, it's also the I love the way you talk, because it's not, we're removing it from the physical. It's me as an entire entity.
It is.
Like, you like this swag. It is the aspect
of my voice. Something I have no control over. And you're like, I like that. I'm like, oh, thank you. Me at my core. All right. Also, the way that I walk, I have no control over that. I kind of waddle.
But people, you appreciate it anyway.
I kind of waddle and you think it's sexy. Look at that. I'm a sexy penguin. Ooh. Look at it.
These knees? Okay, shit.
He then goes on to, you know, discuss his understanding of how some people enjoy the feeling of being choked. And let's take this back to Miss Cardi B in the infamous WAP, where she said, I want to gag, I want to gulp, I want to choke. She said it. I don't remember the words exactly.
That's fine. Cardi knows in our heart.
Yes. You know, this is, knowing that we as women and other folks, sexual beings, may enjoy this as much as you do.
Mm.
And then we get to the part, throat babies, I want to give them to you. In which he understands that there is a risk of avoiding pregnancy that we need. I do not want a physical child because that requires financial capital. That requires social capital that I may not have or be ready to commit to. But how can we both get the sexual pleasure while avoiding that risk? I appreciate thoughtfulness. I'm just saying. I appreciate thoughtfulness. We then go into the first verse where it goes, got a little 100 if that's what you want. Extra little 40. Gotta come right now. Head monster, set an appointment. My soul is wet. I need your anointing. Way too good. May buy you something. Made a whole song. See, I ain't fronting. I'll shoot the world for you. I will go to war for you.
Ooh. Wow.
She ain't even gotta ask for attention. Why? Because I'ma give it to her. What else? Money, I give it to her. Clock on rocks, I'll give it to her. In here.
Is this a ballad? This isn't a ballad.
This is Shakespeare. Okay. What do you want from me? Here, we are talking, when we go back to Got a Little 100, Got a Little 40, he is offering me the financial capital that he knows I'm worth. He is coming up front and saying, here is the dollars for your sexual labor, as he is making me choke. Head monster, I'll set an appointment. Considering my time at agency, I don't come on your call. You are asking me if
you
I had
to schedule me in the future, nigga.
Exactly. If I have done my time management and put you in for April 12th, he knows my time is worthy.
I have never been more convinced of something where I'm saying like
Akua is making a point.
No one is being taken for granted. Again, everything is being appreciated. I see it.
Again, way too good. I may buy you something. Understanding that there has to be reciprocity in this, that I am giving you the sexual labor. I need something in return besides this penis. I appreciate it. Made a whole song for you. That is time and energy. We will ask Rob, who has created a whole jingle for us. Okay, that takes creative labor. That takes time to sit and make a whole song for me, produce and all. I'll shoot the world for you. I'll go to war for you. That line there makes me think of that old white woman, Helen of Troy, the face that launched 1,000 ships, who was sometimes depicted as a sultress or a seductress. Men have gone to war for women, and so will he for me. That is appreciation.
Long-standing tradition.
Right.
BRS yes. cast is joined.
And when we get to the end, you know, clocks on rocks, I give it to her. He's lavishing me, the person, with diamond watches and other expensive gifts. All the love languages are hit here. He understands that you got to spend something, either time or money, to be with me. And that is that. We will not do the second verse, but I want you to go in and listen to the second verse on your own and find these points.
Throw babies.
That's it.
Thank you. In short, thank you.
That's the love song of our generation right there. I'm petitioning for it. I don't even know.
At weddings in the next
At weddings.
Slow first dances,
throw
you know?
Throw babies. We need a BRS. What's it?
BRS
Cash.
BRS Cash. Yeah.
Do it a cappella at somebody's wedding.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Please.
Thank you.
But thank you. Yes, that is all.
All right. We hope you all look forward to future TBD throat baby segments in the future. I don't know what this segment should be called.
I don't know either. If you have suggestions, write them into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking it could be called Fuck Is This?
Fuck Is This? Let me write that down. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Drop the bump for our next segment, which is Fuck That. I felt like that was very current eventsy, which is why that has been chosen.
I was literally gonna say that. It has that Twilight Zone sound to it, which when we do current events, that's what we're in. Like
it's always a fucking Twilight Zone. That is a fact. Once again, shout out to Wave Ghost, also known as Lucas, for producing that. All right, so this is our current events segment, and it's where we talk about things that are going on in the world from the realm of sex, love, and dating. So what's going on the TikTok, as my dad would probably call it?
So we'll be talking about actually both TikTok and Instagram's turn on sex workers, starting with TikTok. So, you know, when people think, and well, when some people think, and me specifically think about TikTok, I think about it as an apparatus, an application that the minors use, right? So I see, I see kids dancing, haven't really, you know, gotten into much of adults, no one past the age of 18 on it, probably past the age of 21. But apparently there's a whole sex economy that's being boosted by TikTok.
Boosted by TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? What do you mean when you say that?
Okay, so according, this is an article from Mel Magazine, and according to the writer Magdalene, I don't know why I remember her name, but I remembered it.
Her biblical name, Mary of Magdalene.
You know, TikTok-related porn has become massively popular in that there isn't anything inherently explicitly sexual about what's happening on TikTok, but typically what you see are, you know, conventionally attractive women kind of half-dressed, home-dressed, and maybe in an athletic bra and some sweatpants, midriff usually showing, dancing in one way or another to, you know, in the secretness of their bedroom or an empty apartment that can be, you know, twisted to be sexual. Mm. And the folks have done just that. So because of TikTok, a lot has changed in the way people are consuming porn, in that there has even been a subreddit created called TikTok Not Safe for Work.
Interesting.
Which had less than 40,000 members last year, but presently has close to a million members. Whoa. And ranks about 50th, 54th in the 100 most popular not safe for work subreddits. There has been notice by porn creators and moguls, I'll call them, that because of TikTok, their search trends such as like natural tits or homemade have has increased about 200%, and that amateur porn is now the most popular category, and most people are searching for, again, natural bodies, quote unquote, and this kind of girl next door aesthetic. Yes,
people are positing that that's happening because of TikTok.
Yes.
Why are they saying that?
Now they're saying that because what has happened is that TikTok creators, there's been this kind of permeable boundary between TikTok creators, adult TikTok creators, and mm-hmm. OnlyFans. And then their mm-hmm. work from OnlyFans is ending up on these porn sites.
That assumption is an assumption. Like, mm-hmm. who can really say one for one?
Yes.
But wouldn't the one for one there be that OnlyFans is driving up those porn searches as opposed to TikTok specifically? Or because they both use both sex workers who are making this kind of content use both platforms?
Yes.
That's the, okay, that's the assumption.
But the assumption that the connection here is that TikTok also sees this connection in the sexualization of their content. And just like other, following suit of Facebook and Instagram, have created new community rules that prohibit the content that depicts, promotes, or glorifies, quote unquote, sexual solicitation, sexual chats, imagery, services, content, or sex camming. And then in late last year, began to purge accounts of specific content creators of specific TikTokers who were within guideline, but the only underlying or connecting factor was that they also had OnlyFans links attached to their page. And TikTok is not the only one to do that. We will talk about Instagram's new terms of service in a moment.
That really pees me off. All right. Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you, helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good ass time? Wow, the responses are so loud in my ear. You're saying that it is, which is amazing. I'd love to hear that. We all love to hear that. And we would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, take a moment to take out your phone, open that app, subscribe to us. If the app, let's say it's the Apple Podcast app, allows you to drop 5 stars, please do that. Okay, you did it. Scroll down a little bit. write a review. Okay, you're writing it out. I love them so much. Wow, submit. Cool. Wow, you did it. Thank you very much. Another thing you can do, if you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. It's really dope. It's called Inner Ho Uprising. We thank and love you all for your continued support. Now let me grind my gears a little bit more. What's going on with Instagram, Akua? Because I'm boiling.
All right. This really pisses me off. So around the same time, Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, late last year, December 20th of 2020 to be exact, published their updated terms of service. And what was, you know, they do that just about every year. But what really drawed people to that was noticing the platform's community guidelines, much like TikTok, included a long list of banned actions and posting no-nos, including explicit sexual solicitation, explicit and implicit sexual language, including references to wetness or an erection, use of suggestive emojis and regional sexual slang or hashtags, and links to other materials such as the use of Linktree links or outside links. And this is in, you know, sex workers and sex educators and sex supporters are saying that the ban of this is detrimental to the livelihood of sex workers. And specifically, the ban of other links in the bio is to prevent people from linking their content and their works to their other adult content. Instagram, of course, says that their new rules are not new. And in fact, they were put in place in 2019, but I feel like were rewritten in clearer terms. And they stated, a spokesperson stated, that the platform had simply changed the wording of its terms of use in order to provide clearer language on how we use data to show personalized ads and so forth. Now, the terms of service that we're seeing, the changes in terms of service that we're seeing in Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, all are coming into play after the signing of the 2018 U.S. bill FOSTA-SESTA, which is Fighting Online Sex Trafficking Act and Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act. And we've talked at length, I feel like Samantha has done a deep dive, about the impact of FOSTA-SESTA on sex workers, sex supporters, sex educators, and we're seeing it now in how we use social media.
Yeah, we have talked about FOSTA-SESTA on the show, and I'll put links to the show notes when we've discussed it.
Mm-hmm. In short, the law, the acts, make it so that publishers are now responsible for any trafficking incidents on their platforms, which is leading them to this over-policing of the content so that they don't have to be caught up in any legal fees that they don't foresee. But we, as previously discussed, FOSTA-SESTA does not really affect sex trafficking as intended, but really impairs the livelihood and creates greater unsafe working conditions for consenting sex workers. Another part of the issue is that there is inconsistent application to these rules. So we'll see celebrities or people with bigger following and bigger platforms who are not adhering to these guidelines, who get to keep their pages and their accounts. And then we see what we're really seeing happening is that these guidelines, these social media is targeting certain people, which are Black and brown people, queer people, fat people, and of course, our sex workers, our sex advocates, our sex supporters. And the question that I wrote was, can celebrities not be sex traffickers too? Like, I don't.
Ooh, spicy.
I don't understand, you know.
Looking at you, Jeffrey Epstein.
So yes, if you are not in adherence to either TikTok, Instagram, or Facebook's new terms of service, the consequences include removal of your content or your post, shadow banning, which is the act of blocking or partially blocking a user and their content from their subscribers and followers, or removal of your account with or without notice, which we know is a labor of love, and building your following on a social media platform, that's a lot of labor to have it removed, and mm-hmm. they typically do not tell us much about why or give it back.
That's like shit.
Is really damaging. But that's what's happening in the social media world. We're seeing how our political actions are impacting what we think are leisurely, you know, activities that we do. But as always, there's like, it's all interconnected or mm-hmm. intersecting.
Mm-hmm. I have 2 points. One, I just want to go back to my Jeffrey Epstein comment. He's not alive anymore or whatever. I don't even know how he used that social media. Nah, he killed himself in jail, or at least that's the story. But then there's a whole conspiracy theory.
Yes, okay. I remember now.
Cover-ups or whatever. But like, to even take it out of that, like, because he is dead, I think of like Chris D'Elia, who wasn't sex trafficking, but like he was like using his social media platforms, including fucking Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You motherfuckers, you're all... I'm getting angry, but I hate all of these people. I mean, he was doing that via the DM servicing on that application, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure many, like, there have been calls of many other celebrities who have done that. So, interesting. True. And then how do you even report anything to, I don't know how you report to Twitter because I've never tried to, but reporting anything to Instagram or Facebook is a bitch. And I'll talk about that after I go on my next tangent. Or it's not a tangent, but like, okay. I think like these big tech companies are a very blatant issue of like, or a very blatant counter argument to when people say capitalism is like the key to solving the world and all innovation is good. And these people are the geniuses who have changed our society for the better. And it's like, yeah, from a legal standpoint, I understand why you did what you did. And it's because you didn't want to fucking pay money in legal fees to protect these people who helped build your platform, honestly, mm-hmm. because sex helps build your platform. So, yeah, like that argument can be made that, yeah, they're trying to protect themselves, but also like you could protect the people who are helping you mm-hmm. Or just be a decent person about it. If like these apps are made to make the world a better place, like by not taking that stand, you're not helping make the world a better place. And you clearly have influence in government. You motherfuckers are so rich. You can pay fucking people to lobby. But then also you could just make a good stand. Like you could take a stand at any point in time, even if it means that you grow broke as the richest motherfucker in the world, Mark Zuckerberg and Jack from Twitter and all that kind of stuff. You can make a stand and you chose not to. But what you did choose to make a stand on is not fucking deplatforming all the people who you're deplatforming now, like the president at this time that we're recording, Trump, and like all these other white supremacist organizations and all these fucking conspiracy theories that have been harboring on your platforms for like the past 8 years now. And it is your fault in part, but like all a bunch of other stuff, but like blood is on your hands for the 5 people who died at the Capitol building. Like, blood is on your hands for that woman who got ran over by a fucking conspiracy theorist. Blood could have been on your hands for that motherfucker who rode up in that pizza shop to kill people over Pizzagate. Like, all this shit that's going on right now, y'all could have took a stand on, but you chose to take a stand against sex workers. Like, I just hate these people so fucking much.
Not just you took a stance against sex workers because that's what you thought. You took a stance against sex workers to save money.
Exactly. And you like, took a stance to not deplatform all these white supremacists to make money.
To make money.
You fucking assholes. Like, how do you not have that foresight? No, because you are so smart or whatever. You did have that foresight. You just didn't give a shit. And that is very evil. Y'all are mad rich. You're not even like $1 billion rich. Y'all are $100 billion rich. How are you that evil of a person? You're unfathomably rich. You're unfathomably evil on top of that. How is human life worth that much money? What are you doing? What does it mean to have your own island? Who the fuck cares? What are you doing on that island?
It's all gonna be underwater soon, okay?
Right? Like, I just hate these people so much. I hate these people so much. And I think that we need to like stop coddling them as people who aren't rich, like to make the point like, oh yeah, they want to do this because they don't want the legal lawsuits. These motherfuckers are unfathomably rich. I don't give a shit about their lawsuits. Are you kidding me? What does that mean to a sex worker who can't pay the rent, who just lost their job? That shit means nothing. Oh, and then my last point. Okay. They just claim to, like, want to protect and blah, 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 but it's very, like, what you said, what's the word you use? Inconsistent. Yes, inconsistent usage of whatever they claim to be as social media platforms. So while we were on break, Somebody hacked into my Facebook account without hacking into my Facebook account. My account was not even logged into. No two-step, oh, we got a ping, somebody's trying to log into your account. My account was not logged into. Yet somehow, people started spending money on an ad account on Facebook that I did not even open. How the fuck does that happen? How does that happen? You have 2 billion users on your website. How does that happen? You know how it happens? Because you have so many fucking people on your website and you don't care about the people on your website. You just care about making money. So it matters that somebody's spending money on my ad account because that's upping your dollars. But it doesn't matter that I don't care because I could just leave. And my voice is so silent compared to y'all that it doesn't matter. And I was not the first person that happened to. And I looked and I saw old Facebook, like, people asking questions. And people have asked this question, like, yo, what is going on? I did not open this account. And they don't respond to them. So I had to wait 2 weeks to even get a response from somebody at Facebook. And what is it? They gave me my money back, but they didn't close the ad account. And they won't close the ad account until I pay them the money that I owe them back. The fuck is this? And I can't get a person on the phone. Like, y'all do not care. These are horrible places. And then you're so big and you buy out other little competition so that it's a monopoly and no one can even go anywhere else. I don't even like Facebook. I only use Facebook to contact people for work. I can't go anywhere else. This is horrible. I hate these people. That's it.
I felt that.
I did.
These niggas ruined the world, son. And like, people tout them and could potentially go down in history as the people, like these geniuses who changed humanity in these great ways. Like, no, you had an idea and you got fucking lucky because you made the idea first. And you were a dirty, evil fucking capitalist pig and you prevented anybody else from making any other ideas. Like, oh yeah, capitalism drives innovation. Then why do all these motherfuckers keep stealing the stories element? Why is there stories on WhatsApp? How's that innovation? Nobody asked for that.
No one.
Give me my money back. How about that? All right. Well, now we're going to get into our next segment. It is called Ask Media. Play the drop.
Ask to Media. I want to see you watching Ask to Media. I want to see you reading Ask to Media. I want to see you giving Ask to Media.
That is our new Ask Media jingle. Yeah. Shout out to Rob for the lead vocals. The harmonization Incredible. Is all me, baby.
Incredible.
Thank you for the rights-free music for whoever the fuck made that techno beat. And shout out to Skins for making a song called Ask to Ask that inspired us to make that jingle. So. Multifaceted process. Ask Media is the segment where we give book, TV, podcast, film, video game reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. They're typically spoiler-free reviews. I'm not sure what this one is, but Rebecca's going to tell us a little bit more.
This one is spoiler-free, okay? Cyberpunk 2077 is a 2020 action role-playing game developed and published by CD Projekt Red. Furthermore, they will be referred to as CDPR. CDPR, because it's a long name. Anyway, the story takes place in Night City, an open world set in the cyberpunk universe. Players assume the first-person perspective of a customizable mercenary known as V, who can acquire skills in hacking and machinery with options for melee and range combat. So for my review of Cyberpunk 2077, the first half, I'm going to talk about how buggy and just a general disappointment this game was to the gaming world at large. But then in the second half of my review, I'm going to go a little bit more in depth on a bunch of reasons why I personally felt like this was a disappointment. And from a Black feminist perspective, it's a lot of racism, caricature, sexism, transphobia, and xenophobia. It's a lot. So we're definitely going to talk about all of that. So if you know about this game at this point, it released when we were on break, but at this point, you know that Cyberpunk was not at all what anybody was expecting it to be. If you don't know about this game, the long and short of it is, it's one of those things that was hyped to be the changing of gaming landscape. Like, no exaggeration, this game, if you think about, I don't know, The Matrix, right? In terms of cinema, it was like supposed to be genre-bending, mind-blowing, and it's not like me, it's gaming gamers thinking this was it. This was the holy grail of gaming. And then it failed. It failed in many ways. I played the PC version. It came out on different platforms, PC, PS4, Xbox One. So then it also came out in the new generation, the Xbox Series X and PS5. And I played on the PC specifically because I wanted to get into PC gaming because it's like this like elitist culture, but like it's actually pretty cool where you can just like swap out different things instead of buying a whole new system every 4 or so years. It's been 10 years, but yeah. So I was fortunate to play it and also finish the game. It was not without gameplay bugs or visual bugs or sound bugs. And then there was also magical cops who popped in as soon as your character commits a crime, which in video games is not a thing. Usually there's like a progression. There's a cop on the corner and then it's like, oh, I saw you do this, as opposed to like I'm in an enclosed building on the 8th floor and somehow a cop magically appeared in the closet. That is a bug. That is not something that should happen. And that's what was happening in this game. And I personally was waiting for this game for 8 years. That was when the teaser popped up on YouTube. It was just one person. It was like 10 seconds. And everyone was like, holy shit, this is going to be amazing. And even though I was underwhelmed by the customization screen, which to me is the favorite part of any video game, I will spend an hour and a half on that customization screen because that person is the person I want to create and I want to get into it. All the way to the credits, I was just like, okay. I had the privilege to laugh it off because in 2020, everything was kind of disappointing. So I was like, no surprise here. It just is what it is. I'm rolling with it. But for other people, because I was playing on PC, I could laugh it off and be like, wow, there's a floating cigarette in the middle of this conversation. Okay, that's weird. But for PS4 and Xbox One players, they were met with a game that was virtually unplayable. They turned it on, crashed straight to the main screen. They had cars that were flying across the screen. And even though this was set in 2077, cars flying across the screen wasn't because of flying cars. It was because it was being flinged across the whole city. And your character might be in the way of it. And it was like, wait a minute, this is not the way that's supposed to be. And there was also game-breaking bugs, just things that, like, in an RPG, a role-playing game specifically, you're supposed to be immersed. You're basically pretending that you are this character, and you're living their life. So, you know, a floating cigarette for me is, like, that's funny, but a car crashing in the middle of a dialogue of a really important, supposed to be sentimental scene is, like, immersion-breaking, and that's just not something that you want, because you're like, I'm out of it now, and it's not really something I'm enjoying anymore. So bad was this mess that Cyberpunk was that Sony, which I've seen other news, I'm obsessed with video game news, I love watching buggy videos, there have been buggier games, but Sony, it was so bad because of the promise that was delivered and all that stuff, Sony actually pulled it off of their PlayStation store, which means we're giving you refunds. If you don't want this game anymore, we're giving it back. And for a company that, at the end of the day, the bottom line is money, to take it off, it was a big deal. And it was no exaggeration to say that for a lot of people, specifically in this decade, but also gamers alike, the way that it turned out was so heartbreaking for people, because I know people personally who were using this game as a vehicle to almost save themselves from the mess that 2020 was. It was almost like, look, as long as Cyberpunk comes out this year, everything's going to be okay. And that's really like, that was a rhetoric across the board. And when it came out and it was just like this disappointing thing, it was just like, of course. But it was really like almost a hopeless feeling. But then also on top of that, you can't talk about Cyberpunk without talking about the developer behind it. So CD Projekt Red, or CDPR, is the game studio behind the Witcher series, where I talk about it all the time. It's my favorite series. It's now a movie show, a TV show. A lot of people are interested in it, but the developer themselves were considered the kind of the darlings of the gaming world, because like EA, Ubisoft, a lot of companies are known to be about money. And granted, it's all about money behind it, but at least CD Projekt Red, you never felt like you were in it for the money. It felt like they were really listening to gamers and they could really do no wrong as a company. They were just like, you know what, you guys are listening. And then when we said something, it was added to the game. And that's not something that you really see across the board. A lot of times it's like these microtransactions, or you feel like you know that your wallet is what they're aiming for. But with them, it was just like, they're listening to us. They love us. These are the gamers. So it was so much so like this halo effect where like they could do nothing. That when CD Projekt Red, it was revealed that in the last month before release, they were doing crunch. So if crunch is a practice where developers are encouraged, forced to work nearly around the clock to finish a game, which is unethical across the board because you have a 5-day work week. They're doing it pretty much 7 days a week. You can sleep where you can fit in, but it's like your job. If you've ever heard, like, you know, you can't come in for this shift, but I would highly encourage you to do it. And you know that your job is in jeopardy if you don't show up. So that's what crunch is. And it's something that they promised that they would never do. And then they ultimately, someone in the company actually released the email saying, like, hey, we're doing around the clock stuff. You need to do this. And everyone kind of like defended them because of the fact that they were just like known to be these good guys. So they're like, you know, there must be a reason why you guys signed up for the job. So you must know this is what it is. All of that. It was crazy. But it was one of those things where a lot of people were still having these rose-colored glasses about CDPR as opposed to thinking, okay, this is weird for them. This is weird for just a game to be forcing people to work around the clock, essentially. It turns out, and we all found out by now, that CDPR was a lot more unethical in a lot of ways than we could have ever even imagined. So when they ended up releasing the games to reviewers, so reviewers usually get a copy for each platform. They get like PC, the old consoles, and the new ones, right? So it was very strange, and you noticed that they were only saying, you can only get it for PC. Like, it was not going to be for any of the consoles, even though they touted it as something that was going to be for last generation and current generation. They were like, look, if you're reviewing the game, it's only going to be for PC, which was weird. But it turns out that it was intentional. It's because, as I mentioned before, for PS4 and Xbox One, this game was virtually unplayable, and they knew it. And that's what ultimately led to refunds, because they were like, not only did you not give out the review codes, you were aware of how bad it was. And you were trying to hide it so that people would get these 10 out of 10 reviews, 9 out of 10 reviews, and then ultimately buy a game that when they play it is a lot of reviewers redid it and gave them 2 out of 10 reviews, 1 out of 10 reviews, because of the fact they were like, wait a minute, this is bad, like the worst that you can think of, which is good. But then I noticed personally, because I was one of those people, given this is the same company that has made my favorite game, and I can't change the fact that that's my favorite game, Witcher 3, but this is something where I'm like, I'm looking at them and I'm like, I remember something else in the marketing besides like, this is going to be a great game for these generations. I also remember it being almost a media fire about one specific thing, and to me was, and something that I thought was incredible, was this genre bending, gender bending portion of the game that they really touted heavily in the media, that when I played, I noticed was completely different than what they were selling us. So if you search the words CDPR, CD Projekt Red, with gender, you will find, I kid you not, hundreds of articles claiming that the developer was going where no game has gone before. In an IGN article from August 2019, you can read CD Projekt Red is doing away with traditional gender options in Cyberpunk 2077 to keep the cyberpunk ethos of the genre. They said that developers are working to make Cyberpunk 2077 really inclusive. They made sure to say that. And that anybody who's playing will feel like they can make their own character, whether or not they're non-binary. Really just throwing out all the words that you're like, oh shit, you're looking at me? You know who I am? You're thinking about me as a character in RPG where I'm not usually represented, and you're saying, we're going to represent you. Literally looking at the LGBTQ community and saying, we want you to play this game because you are included here. During E3, which is the Electronic Gaming Expo, which is like this big thing that happens, it's been canceled a couple times, but they paraded an ad heavily that prominently featured a trans character. They also leaned heavily in the inclusivity angle by having NPCs, which are non-playable characters, other characters in the universe, refer to the character that you're playing by V instead of by gender. All things that they made sure to say, like, hey, we see you, you're in it, play this game, have a good time. And this, it wasn't far away from what the cyberpunk genre is in general. It's all about customization. You're supposed to be imagining a future where technology is at the forefront, and you can pretty much anything that you've ever wanted to do with your body, whether or not you wanted these add-ons, these cybertronics, this skin, this, that. That's what this universe is supposed to be about. You can change who you are. So it wasn't even out of line. Like, you can think of a game like GTA where it would be strange to be thinking in terms of inclusivity, because this is a problematic game where, you know, we killing everybody and doing all type of stuff, as opposed to cyberpunk, where the genre pretty much aligns with this idealism. It's a style of science fiction birthed from the ambition around race and gender and sexuality through the lens of rapid modernization. So at the time, like you said, it's 100% that my character wouldn't have to align with this gender binary. But again, about all things surrounding this game, it was a farce. There was nothing. There's nothing like this. They tried. But there was an article in The Gamer that I feel like explained this perfectly. And it was published in July 2020. And they noticed the cracks before the game was even released. They noticed that CD Projekt Red intended to differentiate the character by voice. So it wasn't like you could just choose and then everything that came afterwards was just what you did. It was like you either had a feminine voice or a masculine voice, which as you hear it, you're like, that's exactly the opposite of what we were trying to do here. If you chose a feminine voice, you were automatically considered female and you were automatically referred to as she and her. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. No matter how you customated your character, the feminine voice was automatically she and her. The masculine voice was automatically he and him, which is, what's different about that? What about our society, which you already know, we already correlate certain tones and pitches and cadences as a problematic way to masculine or feminine, which is what we're trying to do away with, because even cis people whose voices don't necessarily fit their birth gender have a hard time navigating speech. And the point is that codifying gender for gender and sexuality by voice is inherently problematic. So you just did exactly what you any other video game would have done. As opposed to, actually, it's a little bit worse, because I played Saints Row 3, which is a good example of, like, you choose the gender, but you can make the voice whichever way you want. There's almost archaic in the way that they're deciding to do this, even though they use the angle of, we're going to be inclusive. So to me, I'm not a coder, but I feel like it's almost easier to take away the correlation and make it where it's just like a free-for-all, and it can go which way or the other, as opposed to like, yep, feminine voice, she, her. Masculine voice, he, her. He, him. Sorry, I said he, her. And then there was no non-binary option, even though they mentioned it. So there was no they, them option. There was no middle ground. It was just the binary. So it was like, why did you say this? But then on top of that, for me, something that I noticed was I was really into this game. So I was reading about the world before that. I have a book where I'm like, ah, shit, we're getting into this, whatever. And they talk about the gangs in the world. And one of the gangs is called the Voodoo Boys, right? And I'm like,
yikes.
Okay, great. It's the only Haitian representation in the game. And I already know that my culture doesn't get a lot of accurate representation in general, i.e. Bad Boys 2, the Haitians who are the bad guys, but they're smoking hella weed and going mon. And I'm like, I don't know who this is supposed to be, but I guess that's me. In this one, it's the Voodoo Boys, of course, who in the first scene you see them, they're chopping off chicken heads and wearing it as necklaces. Oh, yeah, exactly. And the face is almost like, really? Okay, this is supposed to be the future where everything's different. But it doesn't stop there. It's also the Valentinos, which is the Latino Chicano culture. Their covenant culture, their tattoos. They have the Santa Muerta and the Jesus figures everywhere. Spanish words are just thrown into every sentence, and it's like hombre and this and that. Okay, every character is like that. There's no nuance, even though we could be anything that we want. There's the Moxies, who are a gang of sex workers. Everyone's half naked. They're walking around like, ooh, you know, yes. Then there's the Animals, which is a gang primarily made of black and brown characters that are primarily known for doping and using animal supplements to push themselves to peak physical or bestial condition to portray. Okay. And then there's the Tiger Claws, where in my opinion, is the worst. Every one of them is wielding a katana. Oh, they all know martial arts. They have glowing tattoos, street bikes, and they all reside in Japantown.
Wow.
It's literally the equivalent of J.K. Rowling's Cho Chang, where we're just like, all right, we're going to throw whatever. And it's everything. Is every single character is a racial caricature. And it's like, you're supposed to have me believe that this is the future where everything can be something other than they're being portrayed as. But I'm looking at these archaic ideals of the 80s, of this, oh shit, earlier than that, where cyberpunk really originated in the 80s. But it's like this Japanophobia, this fear where like the main plot is like Japanese people are coming in with their new technology and taking over America. And I'm like, that is this World War II? Is this like what's going on? So it's like people focus on the disappointment of literally the game being trash, but there were so many ideals that were supposed to be like, let me look forward to a future where things are different, and you're literally showing me, if not the same, but worse. And every representation is like, seriously? Like, if my character can be anyone, why is every character exactly the way that the media wants, the stereotypes that we have to digest daily are just being reinforced in this game? And it sucks because people think to themselves, like, it's just a video game. But it's a media, it's a form, and this is something that all eyes were on this, you know? There's not a person who likes video games that doesn't at least know about Cyberpunk. So it's like, you know, I'm a Haitian person where I was on Reddit and people were like, I don't see the big deal, the creator is black. And I'm like, what?
As if black people aren't some of the most anti-Haitian motherfuckers I've ever experienced in my
exactly.
entire life.
It's these conversations that are happening, and the transphobia, the racism, the stereotyping, the characterization of these groups that can never be anything other than what the media portrays them as. This game failed on a huge platform and in every other subset of just like marginalized groups who might have been looking for some semblance of representation that was accurate to what they know. And I remember, like, I want to say there was Samoan tattoos that were used out of context. There was a lot of things that was just, like, almost as if nobody was consulted. Nobody was asked, hey, is this the right way to do this? And in scrambling to finish this game that they promised, they also really betrayed a lot of people who were looking at this as something to uplift these groups and really just say, hey, we see you, but I see you as what you are on TV, and I never even like tried to look deeper than that. And this is supposed to be the future. So a lot of people were just looking forward to a dismal future. But they did make sure to emphasize, if you look up CDPR or Cyberpunk 2077 with penises, you're gonna have a whole lot of articles, and that's the most exciting things. We're gonna have some penises on characters that shouldn't have penises. And, you know, that's it. That's the saving grace. But go ahead, Aku. I'm sorry.
Do you know why there was this crunch? Because the trailer came out 8 years ago. What have y'all been doing in the past 8 years?
So that was the thing. And that's Cyberpunk was supposed to be released. I want to say the first time they ever really gave a release date, and don't quote me on this, was maybe 2018. But really, the concrete release date was April 2020. Then it got delayed to November of 2020. I will not say that every gamer is this calm person where it's just like, you do the game wherever you want to. When they delayed it again from September to December, they received death threats. Like, people were actually angry about the fact that they did it. So the crunch really occurred because they didn't want to have to tell people again that they were going to delay the game. And it's really the higher-ups, the corporation, not the developers themselves, because the developers are just people who, you know, I have ownership of this alleyway that I designed. And, you know, they're not people who are deciding when things are released. They're just making a game until the corporation above them says, you don't have to make the game anymore. So the crunch really happened because they wanted to deliver something fast enough. And there was so much hype around this game to say, hey, we're going to release it in 2021 or 2022, felt like they were going to lose a lot of money. They felt like they were going to lose fan base. And granted, they might have, but in no way near as bad as they would have now. So the crunch in and of itself was because most AAA games, which are like the big ones, like Last of Us 2, like games that are like, you see them everywhere, as opposed to like independent games, there is a degree of crunch that is involved in playing the game, and people mostly look over it, but which sucks, and it's something at the end of the community that we shouldn't allow at all. But with CD Projekt Red, it was so publicized because they promised it wouldn't happen because they knew it was unethical. But it's if you don't give a timeline that leaves enough breathing room, what's going to happen is you promise people December, and by November, you realize there are huge cracks in the game that you cannot fix. So the only way that it can be fixed is if people work all the time. And obviously, it didn't help anyway. But yeah, it was because of pressure, because of money. The same thing that happens with almost every business, but you expected, people expected them to be above that. Yeah. And to me, it's just like, I think I really wanted to highlight that because a lot can be said about bugs and people are really focusing on that. But I remember being so excited because of the fact that they didn't have to say, even though you hope that everyone says it or mentions it, they didn't have to say that they were trying to be inclusive, that they were trying to make something that you can look forward to in the future and think this is like, even though it was a little dystopian-esque, it wasn't like, oh, this is going to be the brightest future ever. There were still things that they mentioned where it was like, we will be inclusive. We will consider people who have never been represented in media, only for me to open my customization screen and want to select eyebrow 18 and it is locked to a female character. You didn't have to say those things. And now my expectation is this, only to be told that this is the same game, if not worse than, because I've played a game where I don't have to be locked to a binary before. So it's not impossible. You said you were gonna do it, only to not do it. And it only makes me think, in the same vein of this, not giving the reviewers this PC code, it's almost to bring people in to get that money. And knowing what people want, only to slap them in the face and saying, you ain't getting that shit. I ain't giving it to you. But thanks for coming. Thanks for your money. And it really sucks because you just don't expect it. And to pander to these crowds only to take their money, it's just shitty. It's just shitty.
First of all, thank you for that extensive unpacking of Cyberpunk 2077.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing video games to Interho Uprising for the first time. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, cool. Let's go.
Ask Media is changing it up a little bit. But to link it back to what I said earlier about how the myth is that capitalism drives innovation, and here we have another instance of that absolutely doing the opposite of that. And it... back to my point of just dragging these rich ass motherfuckers who people think are geniuses. It reminds me of the work practices that Elon Musk does at Tesla, where it's like he thinks of these really huge ideas like, oh, we're going to produce 1 million. That's probably not the number, but like a very large amount of like roadsters by X, Y, and Z date. And the people at his company are like, how the fuck are we going to do that? We can't even feasibly think about how we're going to do that by this date. And then him coming down to, I think it was the Washington Post that wrote an expose about this, him coming down to like the factory floor and being like, where are you at with this? And people being like, nowhere, nigga. Like, we can't get there that fast. And him firing people on the spot and like forcing, honestly, other people who work for him to do these kinds of like similar crunches because they're scared of losing their jobs, and knowing that there's such a high turnover rate for engineers that they'll be able to like refill those roles. Yeah, so that really reminded me of that.
CDPR, it's funny that you mentioned Elon because I said Elon like me and this nigga on first name basis, but anyway,
I mean he don't deserve the respect of a Mr. Musk. Oh,
that's sure.
First of all, that nigga's transphobic in and of himself. But talking about, oh, I want a better world and I can imagine all these things, but you can't even imagine how to fucking call somebody their pronouns, but you want to name your son X, yep. Y, and Z 1, 2, 3. Fuck you. Go ahead. Sorry.
But I'm supposed to acknowledge your son by whatever, you know, computerized name you generated. But CDPR, it turns out, has like quoted or retweeted things from Musk, and people were like, okay, your ideals are a little shady. But then on top of that, people from the developers specifically who received death threats and had no idea, they found out about the time that the game was delayed at the same time as everyone else. It's the same time as the general public. They found out that one, that their game was supposed to be, that they knew in of themselves that wasn't ready to be done. They found out that it was being delayed by just 2 months. And they were like, wait a minute, we didn't think the game was going to be done. What do you mean? So they're on the same vein, which is like, you're making these promises to the people and they have no idea how it's going to get done. And I can't even imagine how that must feel, where you're like, okay, you're doing your job. I'm coding this character, right? I'm doing all this type of stuff. And you know it's nowhere near finished, but you find out in an email that not only are you going to be working around the clock, but you have a deadline that you know is impossible. So people are coming forward now and saying, we never thought that this was something that could be possible, but we don't have a choice. And you find out that, you know, these darlings of the industry are just like everyone else. I think for people who don't know the impact of gaming culture, and even if you do, you don't realize how huge it is for everyone and how serious it is and lives that are affected by just one video game, because it's so serious as a media, as a culture, as everything. But it's never so serious as to, like, you telling me you make arrangements with your family because you're not going to see them for 4 weeks because you're going to be in the studio, sleep here, basically. Granted, obviously, they went from like a 5-day work week to like 6.5 days. And it's just like, it's really serious. There's a lot going on behind the scene. And it was just a letdown through and through, both from an ethical standpoint and just like a video game standpoint, which is bad all across the board.
Oh, child. That was a ride. That was a journey.
I didn't realize that. I think I was so like underwhelmed, but also realizing how disappointed I was when I started, because there were so many things that I feel like were a letdown to me that, granted, when doing research, I realized other people noticed about the transphobia and the racial caricature, so it's good not to be alone. But then there were so many other people who were just like, it's just a video game. But also those were the same people who last week, before any of those things were an issue, were like, this is video game, it's going to change my life. You know what I mean? It's the switch up, and nothing is ever just a video game. The reference of like, okay, what can someone pull up in media to say, how does a Haitian person operate? How do they, what is their culture? What are their standings? They can pull up now Cyberpunk and this footage of someone, the first thing they're saying is chopping off a chicken head and putting it around their neck, and everyone practice voodoo in this world where anybody's skin can be green, anybody can do anything they want. They're all black people, dark-skinned people, wearing chicken bones around their neck and doing all type of stuff. That's the representation that I have. And then there's Bad Boys too. So it's just like, granted, I know my culture, but this is all anybody else will ever know, you know? And then that doesn't just stop there. It's also the Latino representation. It's also the Japanese representation. Why is everyone wielding katanas, no martial arts? Everyone?
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. 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 That is,
yeah.
No media is just media.
Well, thank you for that unpacking.
Of course.
Because I would have never known. Yeah. And now I know.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for that.
See? Akua, I do it for you. Yay. Always.
We don't have time for such conversations, but there's a conversation to be had about what does ethical gaming look like, mm-hmm. or ethical consumption of games. And there's also a conversation to be had about like fake and false futurism that Elon Musk and I think the creators of this game both fall into, because mm-hmm. it's all, we imagine a different world until it's like imagining world outside of cisgender, straight, able-bodied white people. Even if you're black.
Yes.
Even if you're black, you can yes. still do that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that very in-depth review of Cyberpunk Rodeca. Now let us get into our last segment of the day. It is called Fuck You, and here is the bump. Sakua's favorite song. We're moving on to Fuck You. It's the last segment of the day. It is where we read your listener letters. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. Also, because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail. We'll play it and respond to it on the show, so you can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. Today, we've got a letter from PhD PTSD. The subject line, I don't remember it, but I am going to give a content warning for sexual assault, and PhD PTSD did not give their pronouns, so I'll be referring to them as they, them. Hi, hoes. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I started listening while researching podcasts for my intersectionality course and finding engaging podcasts for distance learning during COVID. On your NRE episode, y'all brought up PTSD and traumatic relationships. I suffer from PTSD from multiple sexual assault slash rape experiences. It's been suppressed for most of my life, but after a really horrific traumatic IUD removal, it came back to me. I've been in therapy, but still having a really hard time having engaging in sex. I still have a really hard time engaging in sex with my partner and haven't had an orgasm since. It's been over a year now. My partner and I have found that I feel more okay with sex when I can assume a more dom role, but I still freak out when he tries to touch me. It's slowly gotten better over the last year, but any advice would be fantastic. Signed, PhD PTSD. I'm very sorry that this is happening to you. If possible, and I'm sure Aku will get way more into this from this realm, but I'd recommend finding a counselor who specializes in trauma and PTSD. One thing that has helped me in a similar vein to yours is when I feel triggered or in a period where I'm constantly reliving like this kind of trauma, I begin my days with a set of affirmations that I construct to make me feel safe and address other negative feelings that the trauma is bringing up to my brain. And I also do those affirmations throughout the day if those thoughts, those intrusive thoughts kind of pop up. And I do this for several days to weeks until I feel safe again. And that's my advice, but Aku has a lot more.
Yes. So similar to what Sam said, we are sorry that this is happening to you. I would also recommend, if financially feasible, and if you're able to find one in network, if you're using insurance, is to find a certified sex therapist in conjunction to whoever your current therapist is, because they would probably be better equipped to help you undo triggers occurring in sexual encounters. Like, I have my whole sex background thing, so I'm comfortable with my clients and bringing up sex. But in, like, counseling, I don't feel like a lot of therapists are comfortable having those kind of conversations or have been trained in, you know, having those kind of conversations and navigating difficulties or impairments in sex or sexual activities because of symptoms and whatnot. So I would definitely say a certified sex therapist to help you with that. I also said to continue to assume a dom role in the sex that you have with your partner if you and your partner like it. I don't really know what that means, but it sounds like it's working for you. So continue to do that. In terms of, because it sounds like you wrote this letter to become comfortable with being more vulnerable in sexual encounters and taking more of a sub role in sexual encounters. So to help with that, I would say, like, I don't know where I got this from. And I hate when I don't know where I got this from. But I recall something saying that BDSM, like, helps people with sexual traumas because of the tenets of BDSM. It's all about negotiation and consent and, you know, boundaries and whatnot. I will look into that and then I will give you an actual source about that. Yes, Sam.
Could have been Feminista Jones.
Oh, yes. Just be collecting.
She has definitely said that. I'm not sure where you're linking it from, but
yes. Okay. And I know, like, if it was something I read, I would be able to, like, pull it and cite it. So it had to be something I heard in passing or, like, but nonetheless, I will do more research into that. But I in reading your letter and hearing about your problem, that's what I heard. Like, I have trouble being vulnerable in these sexual encounters. And that's what, you know, that's what sexual trauma steals from us, you know. In sexual assault, there's a power dynamic there in which things you're not consenting to happen to you and you feel very vulnerable. And now being in spaces where you are very vulnerable in these sexual ways can be triggering. It's like, oh no, he can't touch me, but I can take power in being in this more dominant role. So then I thought, okay, you and your partner can talk about this as a part of your relationship and start to work in scenes. Kind of like in a BDSM way, and where you would be taking a more submissive role. And when I say that, doesn't mean that y'all got to get into choking and spanking and bondage and none of that. No. But the practice is that you'd be talking about how this sexual encounter is about to go, set goals for it, negotiate the activities that are going to happen, have safe words and safe gestures and all of that, and have it in a, I don't want to say, the word enclosed is coming to me, but it's like this, it's not a spontaneous or we'll see what happens. It's like from beginning to end, it is planned through and we both have consented and agreed to this so that you feel a lot more safer with the working towards, you know, you being more comfortable in these more vulnerable positions or roles. So I got some of this information on how to set up a scene because I ain't never set a scene in my life from Rekink.com. Okay, yes. And Sam will link that in the show notes as well. But they suggested, one, setting a goal. So I'm going to go into briefly some of the things that they suggested and how to set up scene is setting a goal so that each participant can talk about how they want to feel in this scene. What are we trying to accomplish? What kind of activities do you have in mind? And then making sure to negotiate the activities. I would say probably starting, you know, with one and moving on, or you yourself creating a hierarchy of things that you are most comfortable with to things that you're least comfortable with. You didn't give us much detail, but you kind of said that you're uncomfortable with your partner touching you. So for yourself, you and your partner could talk about, you know, what you're most comfortable with. I don't know what sex looks like for you guys. You didn't pay me a picture. So you guys can talk about what you're most comfortable with and then creating a hierarchy, kind of like exposure therapy, to other things that you are not comfortable with or would least prefer. Not as in limits, but like as in distressing or like something you want to do but are unable to do it because of your trauma. Not we're working to like push past my hard limits. No, that's not what you're doing. If you don't want to be peed on, you don't have to be urinated on. That's not what I'm telling you to do. And then after negotiating the activities, having a safe word or a safe gesture, I am suggesting having a safe word and a safe gesture. A safe word being like red, pineapple, banana, and a safe gesture in which you're like either holding an object during the activity, and if you drop it, it means you're uncomfortable or no longer consenting, or there's a button that you press or a rubber ducky that you squeeze that makes a quack noise for when you're feeling in distress. And I say that because there are times where people are in distress and might be too upset or to think clearly or to speak up, or that you might be triggered and having a flashback and are unable to like use and vocalize yourself in a way. And these other gestures will let your partner know what is happening with you so they can attend to you. Sometimes being vocal is just not what it is. Is not all that, you know, is there. There's body language as well. So with that, setting the scene, I would also say start slow. Something as simple as letting your partner like slowly caress your body while laying nude. Or cuddling naked. I don't know where you are, but starting very slowly, and then moving on once it becomes more pleasurable and more pleasurable than uncomfortable. I don't want you to think that the end goal of this is to orgasm. No, the end goal does not have to be orgasm, and you do not have to push yourself through because you want to make your partner happy or to get past this. If you need to stop, even at the simple of what seems to be the simplest activity, you stop, because we run the risk of re-traumatizing ourselves or further traumatizing ourselves. I would also suggest trying to identify all your triggers and communicating them with your partner beforehand so they can avoid doing things. If they say something in a certain tone that reminds you of a past sexual assault, don't say that no more. You know, whatever it is, triggers are not always stagnant. Sometimes things can trigger us that we didn't even know. So it's not like a hard, fast rule of, hey, you know, here are all of my triggers, be aware of them. They can do all of those things and then, you know, I don't know, move the plant to the left and boom, we're triggered again. So, you know, be remaining flexible in that. And if you do identify a new trigger, adding that onto the list. And I would also say in the realm of Sam's affirmations, creating anchoring statements or affirmations that will help you to manage the anxiety and distress in the moment. So as you're engaging in this activity, you can say statements like, I am safe, or I am with your, insert your partner's name, or I want to do this, not I have to do this, so that there are statements that keep you grounded and present and don't allow, I won't say don't allow, but can reduce the incidence of being triggered or having a flashback and kind of losing our senses of where we are. Also, you can, also with the anchoring statements, which is kind of a cognitive thing or a vocal thing, if you want to say them out loud, you can engage your senses during the activity as well. So I'm an auditory person who likes words of affirmation and dirty talk. So in that situation, it would be nice for like my partner to compliment me. You a sexy little bitch, I like the way you talk. You know, I love compliments, okay? It would be nice for them to compliment me while we're engaging in the designated activity. So like, say we are laying in bed, they are caressing my nude body, saying something like, oh, your skin is so soft, or oh, your skin is so pretty, or I like the way you feel, or whatever. Just kind of talking. Hearing them would keep me grounded. Or maybe you can, in terms of engaging your senses, maybe you can smell one of your favorite scents to keep you present. So if you have like a perfume that you can sniff, engaging your senses that way to keep you present. So as you're smelling it, you're remaining in the moment and not retreating backwards or relapsing, flashbacking into a past assault. I'm going to scream this. Y'all need to practice aftercare after this. If this is something that you engage in, you have to practice aftercare. So that means discussing what you need to recover, because it's going to be a distressing event. It's going to be uncomfortable. You're working to build comfort. You need to be coddled and, you know, recuperated in whatever way. But also discussing with your partner what you need to do if you are triggered in that moment. There's also a guide from Rekink about how Rekink is very BDSM. So it's about how DOMs can help their subs with aftercare, but you and your partner can, you know, take those different roles. And I recommend that you read it and your partner also read it, so they know about aftercare and that you guys can, it can help guide and inform your conversation of how to, what you need. And then, so that is a little behavioral experiment that I would suggest. Talk through it with your therapist, because they know the situation more in depth, I'm hoping. Or a sex therapist, if you find one. I say, you know, this is my advice as a KUA, not a KUA, the licensed mental health counselor, because I am not yours. This is me, a KUA, the moonlighting sex therapist, a sex educator on In a Whole Uprising. So, you know, take that as an idea. Maybe it helps to spark another idea, but always do what you're comfortable with. And be gentle with yourself. And in the meantime, continue to take a dom role or practice other forms of sex. Maybe y'all just mutually masturbate, or they use a toy on you without having to touch you. If that's not triggering, you know, kind of conceptualizing, you know, figure out where you are and what you would be comfortable with. I don't know if any of that made sense, but there we go.
Made lots and lots of sense.
And for those who didn't write in, I feel like you gave information that would be valuable to anybody who's listening. I don't think that anything that I would say would be either different or more conducive to the conversation than what you guys are saying. But I do want to add that I am sorry that this is happening. But all I would say was more speculative stuff, because I don't necessarily have personal experience. Or anything that I can touch on. So I didn't say anything.
I just want to make a note that what Rodeca just did is what people need to do. If you don't got the range, we don't need to hear your voice in the conversation. Thank you, Rodeca, for being a model.
CC all of Clubhouse.
All of them.
To piggyback on that, I have nothing to fucking say.
Nothing more to say.
But I'm going to say it for 20 goddamn minutes. I shit you not. We hope that helps PhD, PTSD. If you feel comfortable, give us an update. If you don't, don't.
Then don't. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to put that re-kink link, it rhymes, in the show notes. And I'm also going to put the episode that we talked to Feminisa Jones, and she gets at, the potentials of using BDSM as a method of healing from trauma as well in the link to the show notes. Anybody got anything else to say?
No, I hope that helps, and good luck on your journey. It's tough.
Well, if this episode made you think, made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate you so, so much.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook, and you can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising, CUMMUNITY, and head over to InahoUprising.com to pay a ho. You can also follow me, Rodeca, at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Existing Crisis on Twitter.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram and Twitter.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. We're all on Clubhouse if that's something that you care about. And my Clubhouse at is at SlamRid as well.
Mine is Rebby or Not, at Rebby or Not.
And mine is at Hey a Cool Girl. You know, I gotta keep consistent.
Yes, yes.
Man, I gotta do that too. I gotta get on it, y'all.
Once again, our sponsor for this episode was BetterHelp, and you can get 10% off by going to BetterHelp.com/IHU. Have a great week, because you motherfucking deserve it.
Bye. Bye.